It went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook.
Charlie, there's one thing, there's a tradition at the Masters, as I understand it, for the champions' dinner. And everybody puts together a menu for the for all the participants that are that there that year. And I understand that you changed things up a little bit for your dinner.
No, it wasn't me, because when I you know the privilege that the defending champion has, which is back then it was quite expensive. You know, I think the defending champion gets to host the dinner, and I think the dinner that that evening in 1972, I think it cost me about $2,500 or $3,000 or something like that, which was a pretty hefty expense. And
I didn't know the defending champ had to pay for it.
Oh yeah, he pays for the dinner. And anyway, I assume they do. I assume they still do that. I don't know. But anyway, in 19, you know, Sandy Lyle won Augusta in 77? No, 87. Yeah, I think so. I'm sorry. 87. 80. Yeah. And anyway, we come back and it's announced that Sandy Lyle has decided that he wants to have a special dinner. Prior to that, it was, you ordered off the menu. You ordered a steak, either a chicken of some sort or a fish of some sort. And then you had all the hors d'oeuvres and cocktails beforehand, and then the drinks and et cetera and so forth. And, but he had announced that he wanted to have a specialty from Scotland, which he was going to have was, and what he was going to have was haggis. And Bruce, I know you know what haggis is.
I certainly do.
You might. When I found out what haggis was, I said, "There's no way that I'm eating haggis. I'm having a steak." And so whenever somebody brings a specialty in, that it's like when Tiger Woods won in 97, then he coming back in 98, he had gotten a little bit of publicity about loving cheeseburgers. And so he was going to serve cheeseburgers. And I told Tiger, I said, "Tiger, you're not getting out with the cheeseburger on me. You're getting, I'm ordering the best steak I can get." So in fact, this next year, nothing against sushi, but I will not eat sushi. I will probably have a steak.
Well, put us in that room. I mean, for our listeners who are listening to you recount your experiences at the Masters, as you mentioned, next year will be your 50th champions dinner over that time. Mm-hmm. And there's certain traditions at the dinner. There's certain seating patterns and seating arrangements. There's certain guys that speak and certain guys that don't. Why don't you just kind of put us in that room?
Well, it's a wonderful evening. In fact, it's, you know, to somebody like myself being totally retired from any type of competitive golf now, it's really the highlight of the year from a golf standpoint, or definitely a highlight of going back to Augusta each year for the tournament. And for years, Byron Nelson was the master of ceremonies, and then Byron, a few years before he died, he kind of decided that he was going to turn over the reins of that. And I don't know if he handpicked Ben Crenshaw or not, but Ben is now the master of ceremonies and does a nice job. And what you will have at the head table, you will have Ben as the master of ceremonies, the defending champion, and the chairman, and then probably, unless they have more than that sitting at the head table, they'll have maybe a golf professional or a former champion that the defending champion has picked that will sit on either end of the table. And then everybody else, there's no assigned seating. You just sit with whoever you like. For a number of years, when it was held up in the upstairs area of the clubhouse there, the table was kind of in a rectangular type of setup, And down at the far end was the master of ceremonies, where he sat, the defending champion and the chairman and et cetera. And on the very far end of the table was where I call, sometimes I call the reprobates. That's where the rest of us sat. I sat down there with Billy Casper and Gary Player and Fuzzy Zeller and, you know, just different players and stuff like that. And it was, I won't say it got kind of wild, but you can imagine with Fuzzy down there, there wasn't a quiet moment. But it's just a great evening. And the guys are pretty good. Everybody is pretty good at the cocktail hour before the dinner of signing flags for one another that guys take back and in most cases give them to charity. Mm-hmm. Like I brought a flag back this year that I've given to a local organization here in Abilene, which does a great job called Meals on Wheels. They have those organizations in other cities, I think, too. But this one here really does a fine job for the local community, and they're going to auction that off, and they'll probably get somewhere between $3,000 and $4,000 for the charity. And that's what a lot of guys do is they take the flags back home that they get signed and give them to somebody that can raise some money for their organization, whatever it might be.
And there's probably a few stories over those 49 years that probably just need to stay right there, huh?
Yeah, the one story that probably most everybody remembers is Art Wall was a very, very good friend of mine. He was probably the first really the name player on the tour that really befriended me when I came out. He came up to me at one of the early tournaments when I was playing and introduced himself like I didn't know who he was. Of course, I did. And told me that if I needed any help getting any shoe sponsor or shirt sponsor or something like that, that he would be more than happy to try to help me with the company that was sponsoring him. And Art and I became very, very good friends. And he was so quiet, you know. Art, I think he would have. I don't think he would argue with anybody. Hardly, at least it just seemed that way. Anyway, and one year they had brought I forgot who it was that came in and did some redesign of the. You remember how the 13th green used to be, Bruce, and they. They widened it over to the left there and dropped it off to where now when you miss the green to the left, you're down that little valley.
Right, which is a tough little spot down there.
And stuff. And anyway, and some players were kind of complaining about that. And anyway, and that's when Hard Harden was the chairman of the tournament. And Art, like I said, a few players would get up and tell stories or say something through the years, but Art never had. And we had no more than finished the what you might call the program of presenting the locket to the for the player's wife, to whoever it was that had won that was the defending champion that year. And Art stuck up his hand, and he stood up and he said. Chairman Harden, I would like to ask a question. And Mr. Harden said, what is it, Art? He said, I just want to know what the hell it is you people are trying to do with this golf course. and for Art to stand up and say that, you know, he must have had a very, very strong feeling about some of the changes that have been made. And not many people probably remember that, but I remember it very well because Art was such a good friend of mine.
We hope you've enjoyed this short track of For the Good of the Game. And please, wherever you listen to your podcast on Apple and Spotify, if you like what you hear, please subscribe, spread the word, and tell your friends. Until we tee it up again, for the good of the game, so long, everybody.
whack down the fairway. It went smack down the fairway. Then it started to slice just a smidge off line. It headed for two, but it bounced off nine. My caddy says, long as you're still in the state, you're okay. Yes, it went straight down the middle, quite a way.